Are you looking for valuable business advice to reach that seven-figure revenue mark? Do you want actionable tips to properly navigate through every business challenge you encounter along the way? Let Tersh Blissett and Josh Crouch be your guide in getting you to the top here at Service Business Mastery. Tune in as they sit down with world-renowned authors in business, leadership, and personal growth who share valuable insights about management, marketing, pricing, human resources, and so much more. Let their nuggets of wisdom gold guide you in owning a thriving, profitable, and ever-growing business. Here are your hosts, Tersh and Josh.
Out there in podcast world, hope you're having a wonderful day. You're listening to or watching the Service Business Mastery Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tersh Blissett, sitting across the table from my co-host, Joshua Crouch. Normally, we have to say virtually because we're usually, he's in Arizona, I'm in Savannah. And we have the wonderful Lila Jones with us today on the podcast. And the unique thing about Miss Lila is the fact that I just got finished listening to her keynote yesterday. We had two other keynote speakers on the podcast, but I didn't check out, I was here setting things up, and I didn't see their keynotes. I didn't know anything about any of them, but I'm prepared with lots of ammo with this with this one. But it was really good. It was great. A great topic, a great talk, very focused on the ladies, which we are at the Women in HVAC conference in Jacksonville, and rightfully so. And you made some amazing points. But before I get started with that, would you introduce yourself, who you are, your background, and what makes you an expert?
An expert. How can you define expert? But yes, excited to be here, Lila Jones. I always share that I have lots of different interesting projects that I get a chance to do, but I get a chance to be a tech exec at Google. I'm a professor at a couple of different universities. And the most important thing, and the thing I think is most interesting today, is one of my missions and purposes is to work with women and girls. And so I like to spread what I call my gold-flecked, crystal-infused, sandalwood-scented pixie dust around to enable and support the self-esteem of women and girls.
That is really cool. Staying bold, embrace your authentic self, and unlock you. I wrote that down at the top of your keynote. You came out on stage and you share what your mom said about your outfit.
So I'll preface it with growing up in a very trade-forward city, which is Milwaukee, growing up in the trades. And, you know, we believe in hard work and don't stand up. Just keep your name out of the papers.
That's the Midwest. That's the Midwest. Up, right? That's Midwest all day.
Right. And so my mom, who's 93, as I was preparing for this conference, I said, "Hey, Mom, I think I'm going to wear this." And she said, "It's too much. It's just too much. Maybe you should wear it with black pants. Or just wear one, but not both. Or maybe put a black turtleneck on just to tone it down a little bit, because it's just too much."
And for those who are listening and not watching this episode, you have a wonderful skirt that has feathers on the bottom of it. And then you have a leopard-printed shirt and feathers on your arms.
I look like a peacock.
She's rocking
it.
I like it. I dig it. Totally.
She's rocking it.
And it's bold. It stands
out.
Yeah. I mean, it fits perfectly. So did you purchase this just for this event? Or is this like normal closet?
She's like, I got five or six of these in the closet. Depends on the day of the week.
I wear this in the halls of Google and it fits in wonderfully. It's actually an interesting story. So I was doing another talk at a women's event, and they had wonderful vendors out front. And I always like to peruse around. And there was a lady who was standing there, and she caught my eye. And I think she had been a person who suffered through cancer, because she had a very unique look. And I walked over to her and she said, "You've got to take a look at my things. I make them, they're all custom." And I was like, "Oh." And I was thinking, I really don't have time for this.
Yeah, right.
But okay. And so I walked through and she said, "I'd like you to try on these two things." And I go, "Oh, it's too loud. I would never wear that. Where would I ever wear that? It's too loud," right? My mom coming out at me. And she said, "You know, just try this on. Just see what you think." And sure enough, it was this outfit. And I tried it on and I thought, oh my God, I've got to have it. And I don't know where I'm going to wear it, but I've got to have it. And so I bought these two pieces and maybe one or two other ones from her. And she looked at me and she said, "This wasn't an accident, was it?" And I said, "No." She was like, "I'm really happy that we connected today." And I said, "So am I." And that was it. It was, but I won't forget that interaction because it was, we had so much connection, so much energy connection. And I don't know how to explain it any other way than just where you just feel like, I got to hang with this lady for a second. And that's where this came from.
That's cool. Did you get a card and purchase more stuff later? Or is like, that's the end of the relationship there?
I got her card. Yeah. And I haven't purchased any. This was just in September.
Oh, okay. So recently.
This is the first time I'm wearing it.
Oh, cool.
So this is the first time I'm telling that story.
Yeah. Well, it's worked out really well because the whole theme of Women in HVACR 2023 was go bold.
That's right.
And, it's funny. You mentioned the connection piece. My wife really loves this stuff. And we were at an event, her and I, separate, not trade specific at all. And one of the speakers was talking about, I think, and I don't know what part of what the actual name of the brain is. Something in the back of your brain takes like 30 million pieces of information every second. And there's something else that takes 5 million pieces. But you draw parallels. You don't even realize that you're drawn to certain things. Your brain just is like drawn to something. So obviously there was something drawn to you guys. And you guys will never be able to probably actually be able to scientifically explain why. But it's wild that that stuff happens. Because it happens all the time. We just don't really think about it. We're like, well, we're drawn to this person for some reason. We have no idea why. Our brain's telling us something, which is a whole different side topic and not what we're talking about today. But it's wild because one interaction, and that's the networking that we've seen throughout this week, has been these interactions and opening people up to what's possible because they don't know. We interviewed, it was a quick interview, one of the scholarship winners. She's just getting out of high school.
Didn't have any idea about the trades. And then, what was it, a counselor that...
A counselor, which is great because that doesn't happen enough.
Yeah.
But pushed her. She's like, you need to look at the trades. And so she applied for a scholarship, won the scholarship. And then her first interaction with the trades is all these wonderful ladies.
God, that's awesome.
All of these amazing, like higher ups at huge corporations all the way down to whatever
other technicians,
entry level positions there are. And she gets to see all of that right from the jump. To see all
gets to hang out with Miss Lori and Miss Sarah. They're like business owners of very successful businesses and other people that she can like say, hey, that's what I want to do one day. Maybe I want to work my way up to being a business owner, or maybe I just want to be a service technician forever, and that's perfectly fine too. And so there's actually service technicians that are here, ladies that are here, and so it was really cool for her to be able to see that and be able to say, okay, that's acceptable, and I'm allowed to be in the trades without any pushback or anything like that. And the thing about it is several years ago, what I would consider old timers would give pushback on it, but now it's like almost, oh, you're a female and you know how to do the trades, please come on board with us. Yeah. Like, we want you here. And it's...
The mind shift's definitely shifted over the last several years.
It really has. It's been really cool seeing that and experiencing that. We did the same thing last year as well. We've kept in touch with the scholarship winners, and it's really awesome seeing their transition and the things that I just never thought that we would be a part of.
Between you, Mary Kelly and Amberly from yesterday, like some really powerful ladies who just give just a different perspective on the world that maybe they haven't seen yet, because there's not, some of those stories aren't out there. They don't get maybe the time on stage that they deserve.
You mentioned something in your talk that I thought was really awesome. And the fact that your family, you had, it was a body shop, mm-hmm. and you hit the nail on the head. I wrote it down. Family businesses become transactional in every conversation. Every time you're talking about something, it ends up talking about work. Like it folds back into work. Julie and I have a rule: work doesn't cross the threshold. So, like in our bedroom, you don't bring work that way. And we had to do that because we work remote also. So we walk down the into the house, and our offices are at the other end of the house, and like, we're there together. And then we walk to the other end of the house and we're there together. And so, and then we come to events like this and we're here together. So it's very important that boundaries, which is another thing that you mentioned. I mean, you did a pretty good job.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
How did you decide? So obviously you had the family business.
You decided not to stay in the business.
Correct.
And that's okay. Which is weird because like I have four kids and we were talking about this yesterday.
It's not weird. It's unique. We already discussed this.
Okay. So we've told our children several times, like, no, we don't want you to be an HVAC business owner. We want you to be what you're good at and what you have passion in. Naturally, they're like, you're a successful HVAC company, you know, business owner. You have two of them. You have a podcast. I want to do something like that. Naturally, because you're successful at it, I need to do that. But it's been our mission over the past multiple years to make sure that they understand, hey, look, if you're good at being a doctor, you enjoy being a doctor, I'd rather you be a doctor, be a nurse, be whatever you're really good at. Because if you take over a business that I have, which there's a strong possibility that I won't have it by the time you're wanting to do it, because like I am a serial entrepreneur, you're going to be miserable. And so I love the fact that you recognize that and you stood up and said, no, I'm going to do something different. That's really cool.
Thank you.
How did you do that? As an individual, how did you?
Especially you have
your family.
You have a big family.
Yes.
Like a really big family.
Crazy. Yeah.
How large is your family?
11 children.
11 kids. Man.
Yeah. A lot of kids.
Do I not have cable?
Back then, no. Cable got like really popular in like 83, 84, right? Like 80, like yeah. When MTV and stuff came out. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know what their deal was, yeah, but yeah. Papa was a Rolling Stone. When I think about my choices, and you know how we talk about, you just know things innately. And I remember growing up and I'd be with cousins or friends and common types of upbringing where the girls are doing most of the stuff in the house and the guys aren't, because that's
very much like our kids.
That's
like when we were kids, yep, the exact same way.
My parents, that's what they model, and you do what you see. And I remember my cousins and everybody saying, Lila, you have to learn how to do these things, and you have to learn how to take care of a family and take care of a husband and blah blah. And I remember thinking, I'm not gonna do any of that. I'll have somebody who works for me to do that. I won't be doing those things. I always kind of innately had that in me. I just didn't know how to let it out. So when it came to the time to say, hey, I knew, or what do you want to do? I knew I wanted to go to school, which nobody else in the family did, by the way.
Really?
Because why go to school? He's going to run the shop.
Yeah, sure.
And I know that sounds crazy, but that's a thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's a thing. Why would we, first off, there's 11 kids. Everybody's not going to college.
How are we going to afford this just to go back to the shop?
Yeah.
To do what dad already does and knows how to do.
Yeah. 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 That's a thing. So it's not like you're getting encouraged and your parents are like, let's look at scholarships and you've got like help. And not only that, as I mentioned in my talk, everybody and all your friends also, their parents are in trades too. And so it's kind of like, well, you can work for my dad's roofing company. And so even though it's a thing where, you know, some of the kids go to college, you know, I went to a very college prep high school. In general, our circle was more, oh no, you're just going to work in tech, or not in tech, but in the trades. So you don't need to spend that money to do that. And so I knew that I wanted to go to school. I knew that I wanted to have something else. I knew I wanted my world to be bigger. I didn't know how to make it bigger. I didn't know what steps to take, but I knew I was going to expose myself to different inputs that other folks didn't. And then, of course, what goes along with not going to college after graduating from high school and working at the shop means you're having early relationships and overcommitting to relationships and popping out kids you can't afford and all of this. And I saw my brothers do these things, and I was just like, oh, my God, no. I refuse to have my family living in my parents' basement,
yep,
right? And that was a thing. Some people can relate to that. It's not a bad thing,
very true.
But you don't want to shoot for it.
Yeah.
And so
it's not a goal.
It's not a goal. And so I saw like these like outcomes from older brothers and sisters not being challenged enough, not having a larger view of the world. And I said, I want something different. And I heard my parents complaining about them all the time and having to support them and having to create roles at the shop so they could have a job, right? All these really...
There's a lot of our listeners probably can relate to that because there's a lot of family businesses here.
It's awful.
A lot of husband, wives, and their kids and all that type of stuff. So
it's awful. It was awful for me because I was always a go-getter and I was always like, go of the, you know, cut the slack. Cut the slack. Let's move forward. And so this is a long way of saying that I did lean into the idea that I needed to do something different, and I did. And I moved away without any support, which is very difficult.
That is tough.
Without any support.
When you have a big family and that naturally you have a large support system with that family.
It's hard.
To move away I can't imagine that.
I had $300.
Wow.
And a car, and I put all my clothes in the back. Just drove off.
Did you know, did you have?
I drove off. Right. I did have some place to go.
Okay.
My first stop was Minnesota. So I knew a girl up there and I knew her just loosely. She wasn't a good friend. I just knew her loosely. And I said, hey, I'm coming to, at that time you page people. It's like, hey, I'm going to be traveling and I'll be in the cities, because you call it the cities. Are you going to be around? Maybe we can grab a drink. And it was a Friday. And she was like, oh my gosh, it takes 6 hours to get from Milwaukee to Chicago to Minneapolis. And she's like, oh my gosh, my radio company or whatever it was that she worked for advertising is having a party tonight, free drinks, free everything, meet us there. I drove to Minnesota. I stopped in a gas station. I changed my clothes. And I went to that party. That's where things kind of launched for me for that particular expression of my life. I actually ended up being in Chicago after that. But my first launch was Minnesota. And while I was there, she's like, you should meet my boss. And they're like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm not really sure. You know, just kind of passing through, looking for that next thing. And they were like, you should come and talk to us on Monday. We're looking for people. We're looking for people
talk
who
about a leap of faith there.
Yeah, have, you know, strong blah blah. I was like, I don't have strong anything, but whatever. And that's kind of where I got my start. And so, yeah, I went from just having nothing to do or no place to go. And then she was like, well, where are you going to stay? And I was like, well, I'm still figuring out. She's like, you should stay with me.
Wow.
And she gave me a place to stay.
Wow.
And so I found a job and a place to stay, and it wasn't perfect. Yeah. You know, I had to sleep on an air mattress for a little while in an apartment with like six other people.
Yeah.
But I came from a big family, so it was fine.
Yeah.
And it was, and I wanted so badly to do my own thing. So that's it.
Do you feel like if you were the oldest child, your life would be different? Because you were able to see the things that your older siblings did that you, not necessarily a bad thing, but things that you realized that that's not the way you wanted
to
do.
Oh my God, yes. I'm so grateful for my birth order, just so you know.
And you were the youngest of 11.
I am so grateful for my birth order. And
so they got to practice on 10 other, and then like, okay.
Oh, yeah. And my parents were older by the time I came around, and so they were kind of like,
calmer.
Just do it, right? And so, which I
they
get.
Gave up at that point, like, I'm done.
Just do it. And so I'm super grateful for that. It certainly informed my experience.
So one of the things that really this is all very great. Types of self-care, 4 tips to unlock you. Being normal is enough. Where is a C just fine? Like these are amazing.
Well, and what we'll do for those listening, because obviously you weren't here, but we'll there's a QR code and a link. We'll get that for you, so that way you can have access to some of these resources.
This isn't necessarily what gravitated us towards you, 100%. We're kind of nerds whenever it comes to AI stuff, and I honestly loved your presentation, but I thought it was going to be an AI presentation because I didn't read the brochure.
Yesterday, I'm looking up. I'm like, okay, you know, Lila's the keynote speaker tomorrow. So I do what most normal people do. I'm like, I'm gonna go creep on LinkedIn and see.
No,
what the
that's
heck
not
she
what
does.
Normal people do. They do Google.
They do, but LinkedIn, I tell you, is awesome for this type of information. And I go, and your title up there, I'm like, I have no idea what that is. So I look at the first post, which was like a month ago, and it says that you are the generative AI ambassador at Google. I'm like, we're going to have to talk about that because and obviously, you know, we'll be able to at least scratch the surface a little bit, but Tersh and I just did a keynote on the disruption of AI in the trades. And obviously, I mean,
and then we did
even
this, we did another one that we kind of glaze over.
Yeah.
And that's the consistency of communication with clients.
And we all know this stuff,
AI,
this stuff is happening at such a rapid pace. OpenAI had some update this week, and you know, now Elon Musk is launching a new thing. Tell us a little bit about that, and
what's your take on that?
Like, yeah, Google's
big.
Well, they're like the biggest. Are they the biggest company in the world? Alphabet.
Alphabet, like, and I've talked to people before, and they're like, well, this person, this leg doesn't talk to this one and this one, so I don't really know about that. What can you tell us, and what's your take on AI?
I'm going to keep it in the theme of women because that's what we're talking about today. And yes, AI is absolutely something that is a passion area for mine. My category that I manage is data and analytics. So I'm always working with companies to try to figure out, A, how do you get your data ready so that you can do amazing, awesome things, which is a job in and of itself, depending on how big your company is. Then once you kind of get your foundation together, what type of use cases are going to actually deliver an outcome that's linked to either impact or revenue. AI is great, but if we can't figure out a way to monetize the outputs from it, it's probably not as meaningful. or have impact from the outcomes from it, it's probably not as useful. And so I get a chance to have a lot of conversations. And of course, the ethics around making sure that we're being super responsible in how we use that tech. And so I'm going to give you the example that I talked about in the talk where I got a chance to be with one of the exchanges. I feel like it was just last week. It probably was in New York. And we were talking about how can companies, how this company that we were there for was using data and analytics and AI to impact human trafficking. And in this particular use case, it was around looking for trends in transactions. So not only do they have a subject matter expert, which was a lady who came and shared her experience of being going from looking for opportunity to landing in Canada. You're not from Canada, otherwise. Landing in Canada and not knowing like what to do and how she kind of got caught into that lifestyle and how she couldn't get out and how there no one would help her. And so she gave her experience, and then she talked about how she worked with the engineers from this company to say, hey, listen, when you're seeing these type of transactions or these cash transactions or large transactions that are followed by lots of small ones like at CVS or whatever, there's probably something wrong there. And so they created this entire algorithm around being able to spot these things and at least throw a red flag up saying, make a phone call or don't finish this or something like that so that they can liberate some of the people who are in those situations. Because those ladies can't raise their hand to say, come liberate me. They don't have any options. And so when I think about the power of AI to be able to have that kind of an impact for a person's life that is enabled by us, the different corporations who have the resources, who have the time, who have the ability to make that happen, that is by far one of the most awesome things ever. Because as a woman who has a child, who's in that exact target, which they talked about, which is around 12 to 13 years old, and it's not just women from other countries, it's girls right here in the U.S. in suburban Buffalo Grove, right?
Playing on Roblox.
They are playing on Roblox and somebody says, meet me at the mall, and they have a fight with you and they're like, I'm going to go do my own thing. And next thing you know, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
And they're done.
That's terrifying.
And so, you never see them again.
Yep.
And it's happening right here, right now, and nobody's talking about it. I was like, why aren't schools talking about this? Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's another topic.
Yeah, you're right.
That being said, when I think about the power of tech to be able to deliver those kind of outcomes, I'm extremely excited to be an ambassador around what the possibilities are when it comes to AI, beyond the consumer part of it that just helps with content or delivery or, you know, creating interesting pictures, you know, really being able to have an impact.
So where do we draw the line on the ethics whenever you're doing with that sort of algorithm, like before it becomes like, invasive as far as like tracking someone's every move?
So in the use case that I gave you, the bank, and there's tracking transactions, you're actually giving them permission to do that.
When you sign up.
Yeah. You basically were saying.
Gave those rights.
It's probably on page 34 of a document
you're
that we didn't even read.
You're giving them the rights. And you're choosing to use that card or that bank account, and you know it's being looked at. We all know that I've traveled quite a bit internationally, and sometimes if I use a certain card, they're calling me saying, hey, wait a minute, somebody's in China trying to use your Visa, are you okay with that? We give them the opportunity to do that because we want that safeguard. Yeah. And so when it comes to ethics, right, if we're saying it's okay to do that because we want these safeguards, we're actually signing up for that type of engagement. Now, if we're not signing up for it or it's not something that's there that we've opted into, then of course that would be something that you'd want to be absolutely skittish about because of the different types of fraud that are out there. Of course, that would be an area that would not be ethical or may not be a place that you want to leverage technology in an open way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
You said, go ahead. You said something back to the data and the analytics component. One, the contractors as a whole really gotten into data in the last couple of years, which sounds wild because this stuff's been around for a long time. But you said that most companies that you talk to, look at, speak with, are their data is a mess.
What do you mean by that?
Sure, great question. If you've been following data, first there was the data warehouse. Everybody was going to do data warehousing projects, right? Where we're going to get all the data from our line of business application, so your HR application, your ERP application, your sales application, and we're going to feed it all through into this data warehouse. And once it gets in that data warehouse, we'll be able to report on it. Challenge is it wasn't real time. right? Challenge is there was different batches in different places, and so it took too long to be able to get it and make a decision. So then everybody says, we're going to get rid of the data warehouse. We're going to do a data lake, right? It's going to be this lake that's going to, you know, be a place where all the data is, and we don't have to worry about any labeling, and it's all going to be in there. And that's moderately successful. Because a lot of the data isn't tagged, think about how you might organize your files or organize your drawers at home. You need to be able to say, okay, the spoons go here, the forks go there. You've got all these different disparate systems that aren't talking to each other. And so they say, I'd love to be able to report on this particular area, but they can't because it is not where it needs to be. So when we start talking about foundational data, it is your master data management strategy. How are you tagging and labeling things? People, I don't know. What's your governance around that? And if you want to bring that into a use case that a consumer might know, even if you've got a Google Drive, yep. How are you tagging those folders? Mm. Are you using the colors? Are you using anything so that you can easily find, you know, 2023 taxes, whatever it may be that you're trying to categorize? Well, take that and exacerbate it by 70,000 employees, everybody doing their own thing. If you don't have a strategy for managing your data and your labeling, that's gonna be really tough. So getting those foundational pieces together so that when we actually do an API and we do a call, we can get a response back. We can actually get the pieces of data that you want in order to answer that question. So that foundational data component, getting your data house in order, and then also adding to that some type of a use case that can give you an output to let you know that this is a good tree to bark up. Why? Because people like to, I call it, they're hobby modelists with AI, right? I want to try this, want to try that. And that's all cool.
That's totally awesome. From
a consumer perspective. But when you're paying a lot of money for these resources to come in and, you know, show you how you can grow top line revenue, you can't dabble forever. All those people are going to get laid off, right? As soon as your stock dips a little bit. So you need to have a win relatively quickly. And so we always say, let's have a discussion around where is there a use case? I use use case a lot that will benefit from what we know is a great area for AI, which is anything that's got a repeatable pattern, anything that's got data that may be small that we can easily go after, anything that when it works, it's going to have an impact and it's going to be visible in the organization. So impact means sells more widgets. Impacting the organization means impacts people in the way they do work and their productivity, so that you can get enough momentum to fund then that data foundational project, which over time can help you be more AI ready.
I love that because it's kind of one of two things. It's either going to make more money or save money.
Got
essentially. Find a use case that makes sense. And we talked to contractors on here because Tersh and I have been talking about Zapier and bridging softwares together for a long time. Some clients of mine and people he knows are like finally starting to use that. I'm like, well, now that's great start. Now it's what else can you do with that versus just bridging the gap and sharing data? How do you do the next step, like actually analyze it?
And the thing about it is what you mentioned about just as simple as naming things consistently through your Google Drive folders. If you're not doing that and you hook a Zap up to it, that's going to break instantly. Like the next time it runs, it's going to break because it's not a consistently named file.
The challenge is nobody wants to fund data cleansing projects.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Nobody wants to fund that because it's not sexy. It doesn't have an ROI.
We have like 600 previous recorded podcast episodes, and 1 year they're formatted 23-11-03-.
Naming convention.
Oh, they're all over the
place. And then the next year, it's a little bit different. And so, yeah.
To that point, Tersh and I were build this massive spreadsheet. We were trying to take and categorize all of them based on like a tag, like this is sales, this is marketing, this is whatever function of the business it was. That we got through maybe 75 of them.
It's the cleansing that, just like you said, that is a manually... Like, it's tough.
And so people typically pay consultants to do that. But that's a very expensive job. Very expensive job. So AI can help with some of that, but you still need to be able to have somebody that can say, yes, this is right, or yes, this is wrong. The other thing is, a lot of times, depending on how big the organization is and the value of organizing it, it might make sense to say, hey, listen, we're going to cut bait from this time on, right? That's so we're going to go back to... Good. 2021 and everything after that, we're going to put some place where if we have to do an API call, we can go and get it. But it's going to be by, you know, exception. Because the truth is, people think, well, we need all the data. Do you? You're reporting on the last year, right? Like, you're not reporting on 15 years ago. I mean, that's more of an e-discovery project anyway, right? Where you're going back and you're, like, looking for, like, you know, that pin in a haystack. So saying, hey, okay, for real-time transactions or for the purposes of this particular application or use case, we're really only going to go back for 2 years, and we're just going to cleanse from there forward.
Yeah, that's a good point.
What are you seeing as far as so that anytime you talk AI, it's just like politics of the world. You're either, you know, you're red or blue. It's like, is it going to replace humans or is it going to enhance humans? And you talk to very large organizations. What is the temperature of those organizations and where they're leaning or thinking? And that may not be able to answer that in one way or another, but what are you seeing when you have those conversations?
Sure. You've got two camps, just like you said, right? There's the Rand McNally folks. Remember Rand McNally and those paper maps? And you'd get out and you'd put it on the hood and you were, you know.
That's when you traveled. You always had to have someone in the passenger seat reading the map. Yep.
And it became like this communal experience. If anybody saw you with the paper on the hood, they all came over and started to chime in, right?
Well, where are you going? What are you doing?
Go up 50 Chevy. Right? And so.
I was a navigator in the Air Force. Like, that's what I did, was read the topographical maps. And
anyway, my point is.
The rule we had was somebody had to stand outside the car and look around while the other person's looking at the map because you're distracted, and that's how you get mugged.
Oh, yeah. It's even worse. I never heard that one before. I like it.
That was a commercial. When I was a kid, I remember watching that commercial. That was the weirdest thing in the world. I was like, we live in the country.
See, I thought it was always just the way where, like, you got unsolicited advice. Maybe it's because I'm a woman. But people just come over and just start talking to you. Yeah, where are you trying to go there? And you're just like, I do it.
But you're definitely from the Midwest. Where are you trying to go there, eh?
Hey, well, where are you trying to go there, eh? Anyway, so I don't know why we say A so much. Anyway, so there's the Rand McNally camp, right, where Rand McNally, they knew that, you know, maps was coming. They could have been in front of that. Right? They could have said, hey, listen, let's bet on both. We've got our core business, but let's bet on both of these just in case we're wrong. They didn't. Where are they now? Where? I haven't seen anything from Rand McNally forever. I know
they
still.
Same place as Blockbuster.
I was just going to that's the first thing on my mind, Blockbuster.
Yep, there you go. So that's an example of you've got the two camps. Now, obviously, that's an extreme case, but AI isn't going away. Right? And so this idea of saying, yeah, it may be scary and new, but it's actually not. And I was saying this earlier when we were chatting. If you've got a Siri, you've been training an AI model for a while now. If you've got, you use Spotify and they make a recommendation, like you might like the song, you don't freak out. Ah, the song! Like, that's AI, right?
That song comes on, you're like, oh man, yes!
That's my jam.
I haven't heard this for 20 years!
And you're wondering, how did they know? Right? And so, it's the same thing. There's no need to be afraid of it. The question is, how do we embrace it with governance, such that we enable the people in our organization to leverage it and understand what the opportunities are without putting our data at risk and without putting our company at risk so that we can still be cutting edge, because it is going to touch every single industry. It is going to touch them all. Right now, the use cases that are most developed are, you know, in the areas around the consumer pieces of it, right? Leveraging content, and certainly with CSRs and any customer service type of a use case. But the other ones are fastly coming on board.
It's wild. We both subscribe to several emails that are AI related, ChatGPT a lot. And it's every 2 weeks, I know there's something new, something, you know, 2 years ago, I didn't think it was even possible. And now it's like, wow, that's wild. So 2 years from now, I can only imagine what, because it's going so fast. Every week it's faster. And like the voice, and like you said, you've been doing that for a long time. I refused to use Siri for a long time for that reason. But obviously everyone else did. So they did it. I mean, they helped build out the language model. And it's been there, and just like Amazon and Spotify, like recommendations for your next things, these things have been getting better and better and better over the years, and now it's starting to become more noticeable to the general public because you can use stuff.
And there's two camps to it, right? There's the assisted AI, which is I'm waiting for you to give me a prompt so I can answer,
yeah.
Right? That's your voice type of use cases. Then there's the non-assistant, which might be autonomous cars. I don't need you to tell me what to do. right? And that's what's developing. That's the new part, right? The assisted AI is not new. We've been doing that for a very long time. It's the non-assisted AI that's growing so quickly. So knowing, again, autonomous cars have been out for a very long time. I'll never forget being in a meeting with a very large insurance company. So this, you know, this automated car, this like coming like the next 10 years, they're like, dude, it's now. It's today. And just because you're not aware of it doesn't mean that it's not today. And so that not needing a prompt and for the large language model to be able to be trained over time and get better and better and to be able to predict what you want.
Yes.
Is similar to like a Spotify, is that's what's growing really fast right now.
There's a program that's in our trades and it listens to what you're saying via your phone in your pocket, but because the large language model so it doesn't have to hear every single word, it can predict the words it doesn't know, it fills it in by predicting it, and it's accurate, like super accurate from super far away. So it's to make sure your technicians are following the script. They're being honest with the customer, and they're like,
they're running the play.
They're running the play, and they're doing exactly how they've been trained to do. Because there's nothing worse than going in and training, spending tons of time training with technicians, and then you get into the home with a consumer, and then all the training is gone. So this just does away with that, and it also helps the technicians so that they can learn to become better, so that they can make more money. And I was like, okay, so what do you have to do? You have to have like a Bluetooth in, and it has to like listen to everything.
No, just gotta set that right there.
You don't have to do that. He literally said it stays in your pocket. And it can hear it, and if it gets muffled, it figures out the filler words. Mm-hmm. And it's like 99% accurate. Mm-hmm. And it's the wildest thing in the world to me.
I think it's fantastic. It just shows you how well voice is doing. I remember when it was not accurate at all, right? But that level of accuracy, it's there. And if
it's so much less robotic.
If you're using
it ever was.
Any kind of a Gmail or anything, like the automated responses. Right, even like in LinkedIn,
they're getting better.
It just gets better and better, and you're like, I don't have to type anything. I'll just pick one of these.
He doesn't type anything,
and it's pretty good.
I always message him because I'll see he sent an email. I think it was this morning or last. Yes, time. I'm like, dude, yeah, that's not you.
That's not you.
I could tell, but it sounds really good.
Yeah.
I tell.
It's way more intelligent than I am.
I shared this with. I had a message. I was a little frustrated with some stuff, and I sent a Slack message to my team. Like, I'm not going to be available. And my connotation was probably a little more negative. So I threw it in ChatGPT.
Slightly,
and I said, hey, take
slightly
this,
negative.
Turn it into a positive message. And it made me sound like such a better leader.
I love it.
And it was like, oh, we trust you guys to do do this and that. But it was so much more positive. And things like that, like when they didn't exist, you're like, man, how did I function without this
stuff?
I know,
right?
And if you can use it and embrace and enhance what is already there and look at it that way versus like doomsday scenario, you know, someday we may cross the doomsday line and threshold, but it's not today and it's not anytime, at least hopefully soon.
Really? I mean, it's just change, right? I mean, people usually will say, oh, change, doomsday. Really?
It's kind of the way it always goes.
It's just change. And it's our,
I love our your positivity
ability to just manage through. It's a change. It's not doomsday. It's just a change. For most people, if you change the way they go to work,
each
day, what's going on? The construction is so much worse than this time than it was in last time. And they just start, you know, saying these really declarative statements where you're just like, it's just change. And so if we can stop, like, what do you call it? Making this granted, there's lots of things that we don't want to happen, but ultimately it's our ability to embrace change and be okay with it, right? That's probably...
Stop with the fear-mongering.
Yeah, just embrace the change.
Yeah. So last thing that I want to say, we need to wrap it up because we're short on time. I'm gonna shift focus back to what you talked about earlier. Just really quick, tell us what it means to whenever you say being normal is enough.
We are all unique, right? You're unique with your shoes and your hat and your gear over here.
That's such a nice way of saying
and,
it.
And...
He's something.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Our normal selves are just fine. Sadly, our institutions, our culture tries to create sameness. Why? Because it's easier to manage. And so we think that that's what we have to do. And when we do that, as I mentioned in the keynote, it's kind of like Mulan when she tried to pretend that she was a man. Yeah. she wasn't able to be as impactful, and she couldn't see and get these different opportunities to kind of save the emperor. When we're doing that and we're taking on these different identities because we feel like we have to fit in or we don't want to stand out, we aren't leaning into our authentic power because we're being somebody else, and that is very, very energy sucking. It's very difficult over time, whether you realize it or not. And so being normal, just your normal self, is enough. It is enough. We could have the courage to say, no, I'm not going to bend or stretch and assimilate based on the people around me. I'm going to be me, and that's okay. And I'm still going to be successful. It doesn't have to be the way somebody else that I was talking to, a lady who's like, hey, I'm going for this vice president role in a sales organization, and I'm not sure if I should take it because I'm looking at the people who do those roles, and I can't sacrifice my family and my life, and those folks have sacrificed their family and their lives, and so I don't want to go for it. Women do that all the time, by the way. And I'm like, just because they're incredibly inefficient doesn't mean that you will be. Like, just because they are, you know, always online doesn't mean you will be. Maybe they're unhappy in their marriage. Maybe they're unhappy in their life, and this is just a way for them to get away from all the things they're not dealing with. Don't assume that because of the way they've modeled the behavior that you have to do the same thing. But people do that all the time. You're going to do it. It's going to mean, you know, 24/7. Really? No, it's not. Just because you're not efficient, I'm smart. I can figure out how to optimize, and I work, use AI, whatever I have to do in order to do this job in, you know, 40 hours a week instead of 80. I'm going to cut out the fluff and do it the way I want to do it. And so having the courage to say, no, my normal is fine. No matter what you say, my normal is fine, and it can deliver just as much, if not more, because I'm staying in my power when I'm doing it, instead of taking on your idea and your point of view and putting on your shoes.
Okay, so that's mm-hmm. I love that. And just to play devil's advocate, what about a situation for like a business owner that wants consistency in uniforms, and your normal, like say that you were just dead set that you're going to be a service technician and you wear this outfit, which is an amazing outfit, but it's not necessarily the safest outfit to climb through an attic with. Just like it's not safe for me to climb through an attic because I don't have the proper shoes and everything else. What do you say to someone like that who wants, I want to
start a business. Start a business and do it your way.
So if it's a safety thing, certainly there has to be standards. Right, you can't come in with high heels if, you know, it's going to make you unsafe.
Right,
I would argue that there's still an opportunity for that person to be creative and unique with those guardrails. So maybe you say, hey, you've got to wear this uniform for this particular job, and this is what we have, and that's in this role. When you get into this next level of role, you can wear whatever you want. But for this particular role, that's the goal. Now, if you want to add a little red tie to it, or you want to add special socks or whatever you want to do so that your authentic can shine for you, that is fine. If you want to change your script a little bit because it helps you to be able to upsell them to, I don't know, the filter cleaning, go for it. I'm going to give you some leeway there, because when you give employees leeway, and you trust them to do that, they perform better. When you tell them, you must do it this way, my way, blah, strict, blah, strict, blah, strict, blah, yep. All they do is figure out ways to bulk the system. You know, how can I tweak this, or how can I get around it, or how can I find a loophole? And they spend more time finding a loophole
effort, yeah.
than they do just servicing the client. So when you try to put those, I'm going to make it strict, and they're going to do it my way, and I'm going to blah, 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 I would look into, why is that so important to you? Is that the only way you've gotten results, and are you imposing your unique style and what made you successful onto people who aren't you? If you want to have 100% turnover, keep doing it.
That's a great way to end this episode.
Lila, how can people learn more about you or connect with you? Or
I always like to tell people to Google Lila Jones. Comes up. But my website, lilajones.com, you can see the speaking things that I'm doing, or reach out to me on LinkedIn. That's also good. My Instagram handle is _Lila Jones. So I'm always posting and getting engaged with people and always looking to help. So
Lila, we really appreciate you hanging out with us and chatting. We've gone all over the place. And before we got started, we went all over the place.
No, this was fantastic. Thank you so much.
We really do appreciate
it. Well, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed the chat. You've allowed me to talk about two things that I'm very passionate about. And one is data and analytics and AI. And the other one is women and empowering them to go out and slay.
If anybody has any questions at all, don't hesitate to reach out to Lila. Or if you have questions for Josh and I, don't hesitate to reach out to us, servicebusinessmastery.com. And until we talk to you next time, I hope you have a wonderful and safe week. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Service Business Mastery. Now that you are equipped with essential business advice from this impactful conversation, you are one step closer to becoming the successful owner of your dreams. If this episode has been helpful to your business journey, don't forget to subscribe to the show, leave a rating, and share it with other owners as well. Visit servicebusinessmastery.com to learn more.